The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Nicholas Petrie. He's got a new book out. It's called Burning Bright. It's a Peter Ashe novel. He joins us by telephone from, where are you, Milwaukee?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
I have to thank Lee Child for this, because we had him on a couple months ago, and I was picking his brain. I said, you know, what's the hot stuff you're reading right now? And he goes, well, he says, when I walk to the airport and I'm in a hurry, I know there's a couple of authors. If I just grab their book, I'll be happy with it. And that was, he named Michael Connelly and John Sanford. And I thought, well, yeah, sure, I agree with you. He says, but you need to track down a book called The Drifter by Nicholas Petrie. And I said, oh, okay, I don't know this book. And so I followed his advice, and I picked up the book, which I think came out just this year in paperback. Is that right?
Right. It was in hardcover in January and paperback in, I think, August.
Well, I went up, and I picked up a copy of it, and I read it. And Lee had said, you know, this character that Nick has created, Peter Ashe, is the closest thing to Jack Reacher. And I thought, really? And then I read the book, and I could see some similarities, but this is entirely your creation, this Peter Ashe. Tell us about him. Who is he?
Well, he's a Marine veteran who's made it home from his wars more or less in one piece, but he's got a post-traumatic stress claustrophobia. It makes it very hard for him to be inside. And in The Drifter, he's comes to Milwaukee, which is where I live, so it's an easy place for me to write about, to help his best friend's widow fix up her house. And under her broken-down front porch, he finds a large, angry dog and a Samsonite suitcase filled with $100 bills and plastic explosives. And the owners of that suitcase would very much like it back. So that's kind of how The Drifter gets rolling.
And he is sort of Reacher-esque in that the whole living in the truck thing, that's sort of like Reacher, but he's a very different kind of a former military guy. He's a guy who, like you say, he's got this condition where when he goes inside a building, he really freaks out, doesn't he?
He does. He has a panic attack. And one of the things that I discovered talking with veterans is that panic attacks are a big part of the sort of undiscussed aftermath of war, and they can come for lots of reasons. It was convenient for me as a writer to give Peter Ashe claustrophobia, because it's a much more interesting story if he can't go inside, but it's just as common for veterans to have agoraphobia. If you can't go outside, well, that wouldn't be a very interesting story for me to tell, so... I was lucky enough to, in writing fiction, to be able to pick and choose the kind of problems I wanted my character to have. But you know, the aftermath of war is not pretty, and we don't really talk about it much. We don't really. There's a little bit of it in the news from time to time, but for me, that was sort of kind of a wake up moment when I realized how little I knew about these men and women we'd asked to go fight this war for us, this war that has now turned out to be kind of a bad idea, I think, widely acknowledged. So that was kind of where it came from for me. And, you know, Reacher, and I love Lee Child's books. I've read them all. When his new book comes out, I basically have to clear my schedule until I've finished it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's really one of the rock stars of the literary world. But whereas Reacher really doesn't want a home. I mean, his personality is such that he's always out roaming around looking for bad guys. My character is sort of the opposite. He would love a home, but he can't really have one. So that was, it was fun to sort of play with the variations on the veteran coming home. And writers have done that for a long time. You could go back to James Lee Burke, his books about Vietnam veterans, Dave Robichaud, those are fantastic. So there are lots of fuel for social conversation as well as great writing in this stuff.
Yeah, Jim Burke, he just turned 80 this month, and
hey, really?
Still going strong.
Good grief.
Nicholas, am I pronouncing your last name right, Petri?
Well, most people call it Petri, okay. Although if you're a fan of the old Dick Van Dyke Show, that was Robin Laura Petri, so I get Petri probably more often than I get Petri, so either way works.
You don't have a preference?
Well, my parents called me Petri, so.
Okay, so we'll step into the Petri dish for this one.
There you go.
Let's talk a little bit about the first book, The Drifter, because these books are linked. There's no need to read them in order, but there is a connection between them. And in the first one, as you mentioned, Peter is in Milwaukee, and he's helping out this woman who's a widow who was married to one of his best buddies back in the military who's died. And there's a lot of dislocation here. There's a lot of dislocated veterans. That's a big part of the story, isn't it?
It is. One of the funny things about this book is that I got to the end of the first draft and I realized that everybody in this book had been affected by the war in one way or another. And it sort of snuck up on me. And I had been reading a lot about Iraq and Afghanistan. I read a lot about Vietnam. I got to the end of my first draft and I sort of thought, oh, I've done this thing that I didn't really realize I was doing. And it took the book to a different place. And there's a lot more there than I had anticipated. And that's one of the wonderful things about writing is you discover the things that you've been thinking about, even though you didn't know you'd been thinking about them.
Nick, I don't think it's a spoiler to mention that in the first book, The Drifter, Peter meets a fellow who is, I guess you could say he's a criminal, but he also wants to become more white collar. And this guy surfaces again in the second book. Can we talk about him a little bit? Because he's a great character.
And we're talking about Lewis?
Yes.
Yeah, Lewis is sort of the foil. Is he sort of the anti-Peter? Is that he joined the military to sort of escape prison and took the school, the skills that he learned there to develop his criminal skills and becomes in the end friends with Peter. And so they're sort of a Laurel and Hardy team, I guess. There's plenty of humor and their interaction is a lot of fun for me to write as well. But one of the interesting things about fiction is that you can approach the same issues from different angles with different characters. And Lewis is someone who was given a certain role in the world and is trying to figure out what he wants his role to be. And it turns out to be different from the role that he feels like he was assigned. Then in the third book, which I'm editing now, you learn a bit more about Lewis's backstory and how he came to be who he is.
I suppose when we mention the fact that these guys are former military veterans, it's kind of a generic term. I guess we should make the point that Peter is a former Marine and that Lewis likes to call him affectionately Jarhead.
Well, yes, and Marines are, and I know this from personal experience. I have some friends who are Marines. Marines are a whole different planet. I have a friend who is now over 70 who served in Vietnam as a Marine, two tours. And if you asked him, I think what his to define himself in it's the three primary roles in his life. One would be husband and father. One would be that he'd run a business of his own for many years, and one would be that he was a Marine, still 40 years after, 40 plus years after he served, and not necessarily in that order. The Marines I know are very much you know, forward-facing, solve the problem, get it done, sometimes with a great deal of finesse, sometimes not so much. I had a friend, when I lived in Seattle, I had a friend who was a Marine who did not like being called jarhead by anybody but a fellow Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things about that term. Again, I didn't serve in the military, so this is just based on conversations I've had, is that if you call someone who is a jarhead and you are not one yourself, that's not a welcome. That's not welcome. There are also people who get special dispensation. And Lewis is such a person that he gets that dispensation from Peter.
Let's look at the second book now, Burning Bright. I see there's a change here. On the first book, it's The Drifter by Nicholas Petrie. On the second book, it's Burning Bright, a Peter Ashe novel by Nick Petrie. We've had an editorial change on your name.
I always assumed when I actually finally managed to publish a novel that I would use my full name, which is Nicholas. But oddly enough, at every step along the way, first my agent and my editor and then even booksellers have suggested that I write as Nick rather than Nicholas. And nobody ever calls me Nicholas anyway, not even my mom. So it just sort of seemed like a no-brainer, and if I was going to do it, I should do it sooner rather than later. The only concern I really had was that people who knew the book and knew me as a writer, as Nicholas, still be able to find those books, and the publisher's been working very hard on that. So it's just sort of a natural progression, and if it was something that I was going to do, I sort of had to do it sooner rather than later. So it's sort of a goofy thing, but I think my editor in particular thought it was a much more sort of a thriller writer's name to be Nick rather than Nicholas.
Well, in this new one, Burning Bright, Peter has turned up on the West Coast, and he is destined in this one to do something that Jack Reacher wouldn't do. Jack occasionally dabbles in love, but he's mostly a solitary guy, whereas in this one, you have the most amazing situation where our guy, Peter, meets a woman that he just thinks is fantastic. And where he meets her, I think, is one of the most interesting locales possible. And I'm not going to say where, but it's pretty cool how you set this up.
Well, thanks. One of the funny things about how the second book came about is the publisher agreed to publish The Drifter, but what they wanted was a second book in a series. And so the first book took me about 4 years to write, working full time and I have a family and all those other things. But they wanted the second book in a year. And so I really had no plans for a second book. I really, the only idea I had was that I wanted Peter to fall in love, and I wanted it to be about sort of cutting-edge technology, which to me meant it should take place on the West Coast. It was so much fun to write sort of the romance on the run piece. It's kind of a road book.
Uh-huh.
I didn't quite know how it was going to go until I wrote that first section in June's voice. His love interest name is June Cassidy. Once I wrote that first section in her voice, I sort of thought, oh, I can do this. And I knew she was going to be a very strong personality, because that's the kind of person that he would need. And it's easy, because I've married a very strong personality. My wife has very strong opinions, and my mom is a very strong woman, and my sister and my sister-in-law are also, very forceful and accomplished people. So it was fun to sort of bring those qualities out and to see them on the page.
Well, it's interesting to read as a reader, because as he appears on the scene, he's really her white knight, her rescuer, her protector. But when she sees what he's willing to do, she's not quite so sure she wants to be around this guy.
Well, and I think that's, again, it goes back to the piece about how we see and think about our veterans, the people that we have asked to go do difficult, often unspeakable things in our name, and things that we as a society haven't really thought a whole lot about. But we need people to go do those things, because the world is not, it's not, we don't live in the suburbs, right? The world is not always a nice place. And we do have really mixed feelings about the things that we've asked people to do, and what having lived through those experiences might do to the people we've asked to go do those things. So, you know, that was another way to kind of have that conversation and to keep talking about the journey that veterans are on to figure out how to survive their own war, the war that they had to live through, and to figure out what the next phases of their lives are. So that, I mean, again, that was it. It's all. This seems to be something that I have. It's something that I didn't know that I was so interested in. But the more I read about it, and the more people I talk to, the more compelling it is to me that we have this. It's sort of the elephant in the room for our culture, that we have folks we've asked to go do some things that, again, I've never served in the military. These are things that I've never done, but that we as a culture don't really know how to accept them back in, or to even have that conversation. So this is, in a way, kind of me trying to have that conversation out loud, in a way.
In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Book Nook, and my guest is Nick Petrie. We're talking about his new book, Burning Bright, the second Peter Ash novel in what we hope will be a long series. And he joins us by telephone from Milwaukee. I'm guessing that since June's parents are a big part of this story, that it's probably okay to talk about her mother a little bit, but we probably shouldn't talk about her dad at all, except to say that his nickname is the Yeti.
Sure. June's mother is a professor at Stanford, and she is technology is sort of one of the things that I'm personally interested in, and her mother is working on sort of artificial intelligence technology and machine learning and all of these things that are actually very much in the news now. There was just a great long article in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago about machine learning and the ways that now software is teaching itself how to be better at its job. So that's, you know, I wrote that quite a while ago now, but it's fun to sort of think about these things that we all sort of take for granted and think about what it might look like, what's the next step like, or the step after that. We find out that she's been killed in a hit and run accident very early in the book, but she's discovered, June finds some men cleaning out her dead mother's laboratory at Stanford, and those are the people that are chasing June now.
Hmm. You have some lovely villains in both books, and some surprising twists. We find in each book that the person who ends up being the real villain is someone unexpected, and I love the way you do this. How did you decide that you're going to be a novelist and you're going to write this kind of stuff?
Well, I wanted to be a writer since high school. I was the editor of my high school newspaper, and the faculty advisor realized very early on, I'd been writing since I was a freshman, he realized early that I was not terribly interested in facts, that writing news stories was not going to be my thing. But by the time I was a senior, I was writing, I had an 8-part soap opera based on recognizable people from the school. So I've been writing fiction for a long, long time. I have a master's in fine arts from the University of Washington. I wrote for 25 years, but The Drifter, which was just came out in 2016, was the first book I was able to get published. It was actually the fourth book I'd written.
Mm.
I quite honestly, never really thought after writing for so long that it would ever be published. And one of the kind of holy mackerel moments for me was realizing that I'd written this book about veterans and that it was actually going to be published and that I'd never served myself. And I had no idea what that reaction would be. What's been really gratifying is to have people come up to me at readings or to send me notes, or if they find me on Facebook. I get Facebook messages all the time. The one that I think I remember the most are the two women who came up to me at a library after I had done had a conversation, and said, "Our husbands would never come up to talk to you, but they served in Vietnam, and your book helped us understand them." And as a writer, that is the highest compliment that I can imagine, is to have a reader say, "I learned something about someone I love because of something that you wrote." So that's been sort of the craziest piece of this, is that I set out to write a piece of entertainment. I set out to write a thriller that would hopefully keep you turning the pages and make you laugh and get your heart racing a little bit, and to discover that there were people that were really moved by what I'd written, which was my goal, but I never thought I could actually accomplish it quite to that level. So it's been really kind of astonishing.
Well, I guess it begs the question, at least slightly. Lee Child, of course, was never a military policeman in the United States military, in the Army, and you have not served in the military. So how do you guys get inside the heads of these veterans?
Well, I really feel like the important thing is to get a certain attitude right, this kind of quiet confidence and a desire to be useful. And that desire to be useful, to help, is the thing that I found the most in the conversations that I've had with veterans over the years, is that I can't tell you how many people I talked to, men and women both, who joined up after 9/11 because they wanted to help. They wanted to be part of the solution. And to me, there was something so profound and moving about that. To go and risk your life for an idea. And there's something that to me is very American about that as well. And not cynical in a way that it seems very, it's so easy to be cynical and it's so easy to be ironic in the world, but to really be heartfelt and to put your money where your mouth is, to me, is very moving. So I think once I figured that piece out, the rest of it was easier. The post-traumatic stress part was more about research, but it was also realizing kind of how much of that I have in me as well. So I have asthma. So when my lungs start to fill, my heart starts to pound, and it's a different source, and it's a different, it comes from a different place, but that reaction is somewhat the same. My asthma is well under control, but I'm an exercise freak. It's a way that kind of keeps me sane. Mm-hmm. Part of it is finding that part of you inside of you that is like somebody else. It's how actors play roles for people that are not like them. It's how, white people can write about being a black person. Black people can write about being Hispanic. We all have this commonality, and the goal is to sort of tap into what we all share as opposed to what makes us different.
You do it very well.
Thank you.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. And my guest today in the Book Nook is Nick Petrie. His new Peter Ash novel, Burning Bright, just came out. And in a way, I guess you probably feel like you're living the dream. You've always dreamed about being a writer, and here you have a couple of novels out. You're starting a series on a major publishing imprint. You've got the third book that you're working on. But as I have learned over the years, for every James Patterson, there's 100 writers who are never going to make $1 million from their work. Have you quit your day job yet?
Oh, no. And I can't imagine quitting my day job at this point. So what I do most days is I work as a home inspector. So if you buy a house, you hire a guy like me to tell you what's wrong with it and what's working well. I was a carpenter for 15 years. I ran a remodeling business. So that's kind of what gives me the expertise to do that. But it's sort of the opposite of being a writer, because I'm out in the world and I'm talking to strangers, and I'm climbing around houses looking at the physical world. So it's a great antidote to being a guy who stares at his laptop, staring at a screen for long periods of time. And being a writer is also a great antidote for, being a guy in his late 40s, climbing around houses and walking up on roofs. And, so the two work well together. There are, what I tell people is that I'm working as a home inspector about 75% of the time, and I'm working as a writer about 75% of the time. So that'll give you some sense of the hours I'm working.
Gotcha.
But it's like starting a new business. It's like having a baby. It's like anything else. There's stuff to be done, and you just do it.
Well, thanks for squeezing in this phone call with us and that
it's my pleasure.
Busy schedule of yours. And I have a question that just came to my mind, and that is, how is carpentry like writing a novel?
Well, in some ways it's very similar, because you have a plan and you work your way forward. And what I loved about being a carpenter, is just on a metaphorical level, is every day you got to accomplish something. And every day you left something undone. There was something else to do. But you could turn around at the end of the day, loading your tool belt back in your truck, and you could see what you'd done. And there was something really satisfying about that. But I don't write from an outline, so I don't really have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
I have a goal or an orienting statement that kind of launches me forward. And after that, I'm making it up as I go along. So in that way, it's very different. But it really is all about the details, and it really is about paying close attention. It's more like finished carpentry than it is like rough framing, because you want the corners to fit together just right. You want the cabinet to be scribed to the wall so that you can't see the line where things come together. And it's a lot like right now I'm editing. So editing is a lot like remodeling, where you kind of have to tear this piece out, but you have to keep that piece intact.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I miss swinging a hammer all day. I will say that I really enjoyed making stuff with my hands, and it's a different life. I'm still making stuff, but it's harder to turn around at the end of the day and see what you've accomplished.
Well, we really appreciate your time today, Nick.
Oh, it was my great pleasure, and thank you so much for your interest. And I hope your listeners enjoy the books.
My guest has been Nick Petrie. His first book is The Drifter. His second book, Burning Bright, another Peter Ash novel, just came out, and it's a real page-turner, and he's got the third one on the way, and I'm hoping that Peter and June are still together in that one. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks.